Thanks for tuning in to the Drive On Podcast, where we are focused on giving hope and strength to the entire military community. Whether you're a veteran, active duty, guard, reserve, or a family member, this podcast will share inspirational stories and resources that are useful to you. I'm your host, Scott DeLucio, and now let's get on with the show. Hey everybody, today my guest is Cliff Van Rickley. Cliff works for Veteran Life, which is an online resource for transitioning and post-transition veterans and their families. He recently wrote an article based on a personal story titled Signs of PTSD, A Special Ops Veteran's Awakening. And we're going to be talking about that article and what Veteran Life is all about in this episode. Also, I want to be sure that listeners are aware that this episode will probably cover some various forms of trauma, including suicide and mental health related topics. So if that's not something that you're up for listening to right now, you can stop listening now. No hard feelings, and we'll catch you next week. So anyways, welcome to the show, Cliff. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and your background?
Thanks, Scott, and thanks for having me on.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so I did 20 years, 1 month, and 9 days in the Army. I only know because my DD-214 says so, right? And just like everybody else in the Army, joined up, or just like everybody else who joined up kind of during my era, and went off to Iraq five times, I think, and did Afghanistan and a few other trips along the way. Had a great career, mostly in Special Forces, and transitioned from the military about 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, and been kind of, in the civilian life ever since. Worked for a kind of a technology logistics startup out of San Francisco. We were in the Nashville office, and one day prior to COVID, they said, "Hey, sorry, but you guys can all go home now." I got laid off right before COVID happened, right? So that was an interesting thing, but it was a great experience. And then, just like a lot of people, millions of people around the world had to look for a job during the pandemic, and was fortunate enough to get the opportunity that I'm in now. And along the way, I've really been trying to champion veteran advocacy and veteran stories along the way. And that's kind of where it leads us to where we are now.
Yeah, awesome. And so I'd like to unpack this article that you wrote, The Signs of PTSD, because it has some pretty deep topics that you cover in that article. And if it's okay with you, and I think that is, I'm going to read some parts of the article in this episode here, and kind of going to be like a little bit of a teaser to get some people to go check out the article and check out what you have going on over at Veterans Life, and then we can kind of discuss what's going on in the article there. So it starts off with you saying, first of all, it wasn't supposed to happen to any of us. We had all the traits you need to withstand the suck factor or of being in the Special Forces: mental toughness, physical prowess, problem solving abilities, and true grit. So when Nick, a grizzly Special Forces veteran, took his own life, we took notice. So what was going on there? Who was Nick? What happened to him? And I know you said before we started recording, all the names in this have been changed to protect the innocent and all that. So Nick is not really Nick. Nick, as you put it, Nick could be any of us.
Yeah.
So what was going on with Nick and what happened?
Yeah, well, I'd like to start by saying really that by the time I got into Special Forces, I was a senior NCO. Right. I'd been in the Army for 8 years, and I've seen, heard, and bared witness to a lot of the different, suicide training, and had heard plenty of stories about people killing themselves. As a matter of fact, prior to me making the switch over to Special Forces, that we in my unit, a chaplain's assistant of all people, was found to have killed himself, right? So, but nobody that I was connected to personally, nobody who I had a connection with, shared beer with, and Nick was somebody who I actually went to the Q course with, to the Special Forces qualification course. We didn't know each other intimately or anything like that, but we kind of ran around the same circle, graduated at the same time, and kind of had the same mindset where, let's get stuff done. let's have a good time, you know, and embrace the suck factor that can be the special force qualification course. I think I went to Sears school with Nick. I mean, several phases of the qualification course. So, you know, I suppose it was just maybe 5 years or less after the graduation from the Q course when I had heard about Nick and you know, you kind of look to see, like, was there anything that stood out for me, having not been working, you know, day to day with him for a long time, just knowing him. And as a matter of fact, a lot of my close friends were close with him as well. And what I found was, you know, there are those little things that sneak up in your head and you're like, wow, yeah, you know, I knew Nick had some problems with his marriage. I knew Nick could go down the path of drinking too much from time to time. I knew Nick, you know, he just had that fiery look. He was kind of like a mix between kind of what you would picture kind of a Native American guy with a Irish guy, you know, kind of those type of features, you know?
Okay.
And you know, it really got me thinking, like, wow, this sucks. This is the first one that I've had where, you know, I knew that person and you go to their memorial and their funeral and you really feel for the family. The family's all there. And, you know, at the time when Nick took his life, you know, it was honestly mixed feelings. I like I said, we are selected for tough life, for that grit. And as I point out in my article, many years, whenever you heard of people taking their lives, especially in the special forces, special operations community, you're kind of like, wow, man, where'd that come from? And then you even right. make sick jokes about it at that well, time.
And one of the things that sort of helps you in along with deployment and difficult jobs that you might have, like in the military, special forces, you know, is that dark humor. You know, we used to do it all the time. When we were in Afghanistan, we'd make jokes all the time about, you know, people not coming back from a mission or, you know, something like that. And but it was a way to kind of ease the tension of what was going on around us, you know? And so, you know, it's something I think we all do in one way or another. And in some cases, I think it's actually sort of healthy to be able to joke about some things so you're not so uptight about everything, you know? Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, you know, that's a good point. And you know, I think in the piece that I wrote, I kind of highlighted that there is a lot of joking. There is a lot of that sick humor. And I think the more times you deploy, the sicker it can be, the thicker your skin is on the exterior, at least, right? People, but then you find out people are really hurting inside, you know, and even the people who make the jokes, hurting inside and we really internalize it. You know, a lot of veterans of my community, your community, I'm sure, get out of the Army and they have to be explained what physical pain is, because the person giving you an examination when you get out say, hey, does this hurt? You're like, tell me what that means. What does that word right. hurt? What is pain? Because I have to reset my mind because I've hid it for so long. That's just physical stuff. So,
or they say that, you know, how much does this hurt? And you say, oh, just the normal amount. And they're like, well, the normal amount is zero. So you're like, what?
Yeah. Well, what's zero? but yeah, the humor is there. Hey man, you look like you're feeling sad. Can I get your stereo? If you
yeah, right.
Right. Can I get that in writing? Or, you know, have guys say, hey, how soon is too soon to start dating your girlfriend?
Right.
And
right.
Yeah. And it's sick, but it's also a form of therapeutic acceptance, I believe.
Yeah. Just accepting that you can't necessarily control everything that's going to happen to you,
right.
Especially when you're in a dangerous environment, like a combat zone or whatever. So,
yeah. In the same way, you have people who have deep trauma or personal problems or even trauma from childhood that they're dealing with that are keeping it in. And believe me, it becomes a liability that they're keeping it inside, right? So the environment that we were bolstering was, hey, we know you probably have some problems. Keep it to yourself. Let's finish this deployment. Let's restack the deck, see who needs to go, get some time off, who doesn't. Right. And you know, in retrospect, it's not healthy. It's not helpful. And the numbers don't lie. We weren't doing it right.
Yeah. And that's true, I think, throughout a lot of the military, especially, in the folks that see combat on a more regular basis, not necessarily the, more of the admin side of things, but the infantry, the special forces, anyone in the combat arms, I think, is going to have something similar to that, where you just kind of want to just push through and get to where you're going, do what you're supposed to be doing. You want to be there for your team, for your guys, whoever that you're out there, and you don't want to feel like you're letting them down by, my knee's bothering me or whatever. So I'm just going to suck it up and I'm going to deal with it. Or, I got problems with my wife, and so I'm just going to, ignore that so I can just go on this deployment or whatever. Like, when you ignore problems like that, they never get better.
Yeah. I don't know why I keep bringing this analogy up or this comparison with the physical, but the physical and the mental really, they kind of have the same symptom and the same result. I hide my injury. I go on a deployment. I go on multiple deployments. I keep jumping out of the airplanes. Guess what? It's hard to get out of bed.
Right.
And having issues with alcohol or failed marriage or some family problems, or maybe even something that happened during a deployment before we met. Those are issues that just keep compounding themselves. And, unfortunately we get to that point where, sometimes where people break.
No, that's very true. And I want to get back to the article here and kind of talk a little bit more about some of the stuff that you talked about, but I just want to let everyone know that the stuff that I'm reading for this article, I'm summarizing. I'm not reading the whole article. There's going to be a link to this article in the show notes, so I definitely encourage everyone to go check that article out and see all the stuff that is talked about in that article, because it's really good. I don't want to cover everything in this episode. I want to give everyone a reason to go check that article out and give it a good read and understand everything that it is that Cliff's talking about in that article.
Appreciate that, Scott.
Yeah, no problem. So now let's jump ahead a little bit to where you're talking about transitioning out of the military. And so you say in the article, I begin to sink into depression as I realize my life as an action guy was coming to an end. While working a thankless staff job and going to graduate school, I realized I'd already had the best job I'd ever hoped to have. Before, I was a leader in the special forces. Now I'm just another face in the crowd. Now, that kind of depression, I don't think is uncommon. That maybe not necessarily depression, but that realization that I had the coolest job like ever, and it's not going to get any better than that. After getting out, and when we transition out of the military, we sort of lose a piece of our identity. We sort of have to grieve the loss of who we were before we can move on. So what happened when you realized that you needed to get some help to kind of get over that depression and before it got to be something more serious?
Yeah. Well, just like a lot of guys and girls, there comes that time where you walk away from the thing that you worked so hard to get to. And you have to look inside and say, what am I doing now? This isn't what I trained for. And what the article actually discusses is when the last couple of years of my time on active duty, right? I had left my ODA, my special forces team, where I was the team sergeant, greatest job I'll ever have. And I know that, and I've accepted that, but there's that time period. I always tell people that leaving the team room for the last time, especially when you were the team sergeant or team leader, it feels like postpartum depression.
Yeah,
right? It does. It's like, wow, man, like those guys are still kicking ass without me. Right. You know, they're getting new leadership, and I wonder what that's like. And here I am, you know, basically working a 9-to-5, planning my transition out of the Army. Don't know who I am, because who I was the guy who got to shoot guns and jump out of airplanes.
Right.
And you know, postpartum depression is the only way I could really describe it. And I've talked to several people afterwards about what that feels like. And it's a pretty common thing, right? And so I knew that, you know, I was feeling a bit of depression and anxiety from transition. I had a lot going on. All right. So I was finishing business school. I was retiring. I was selling a house, building a house. I had two kids. I have a wife. All these things, right? Trying to find a new job. Mm-hmm. There's a lot going on. And from time to time, I would just snap, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't doubt it, because any one of those things in and of itself could be stressful, you know. Yeah. Finding a job, going to school, you know, transitioning out, all that stuff, that all could be very stressful in and of itself. So
yeah, and so I don't know, I it's one of those things where I was off of a team and I was like, you know what, maybe I can do something about this, maybe I can use some help, maybe I could use some help chemically, mm-hmm. meaning some medicine or whatever. So I actually, you know, during one of the post-deployment surveys or whatever, mentioned to the doctor, hey, you know, I'm having these issues and I think I need some help. I'm like crying out for help. I'm not on team anymore and I think I need some help. And you know, the answer was, hey, you should make another appointment because I'm not the guy.
And it
took two more years to when I was actually like doing my retirement stuff, where I finally got the courage to say, hey, look, like things aren't getting any easier. And I need something, right? I need to talk to somebody or I need to get some help. And they gave me something and it really helped. I didn't feel like it dulled my senses or made me placid or softened my edge there where I needed to be. It just kind of helped me be like a duck. You know, the water just rolled off my back a couple times.
Right.
And
that's a good way of putting it, you know?
Yeah. And in hindsight, I'm like, man, I'm embarrassed I didn't go get this help later. Mm-hmm. Or earlier, excuse me.
Earlier, yeah.
Yeah, so that's what that was. And we have to be comfortable asking for help and not feeling like, you know, there's this stigma also that like if I go to my medic, my doctor, my PA, whatever, and say, hey, I need some narcs, there's this like, you know, you're afraid that they're going to look at you like you're some kind of junkie, like you're trying to, like, no, I'm not asking for anything cool, man. I need something to like, because I'm freaking out, man. I got a lot going on. I'm like stressed all the time. I feel tense right now. Give me something, please. You know, but thankfully, eventually, a little bit too late probably, but eventually I got something that helped me out.
Yeah, and I guess in the moral of that story is it's better late than never, but
better
the sooner than, you should the ask. Sooner the better. Definitely ask and get the ball rolling and get on that if you need it. So going back to the article you wrote about your buddy who was struggling with PTSD, and in the article you wrote, nothing prepares you for when your buddy's wife calls and asks you to come quick. She says, he's in a real dark place. He's been drinking all day. He's talking about suicide. Come quick. You know, so she's calling out for help. You know, she doesn't know what to do. She's, you know, she needs some help. Right. So Like a lot of other folks in the military, you're trained to recognize the signs of PTSD, all these warning signs that people might have, but this situation still left you feeling sort of unprepared with this person, right?
Completely blindsided. If I'm being honest, completely blindsided and embarrassed to be blindsided, to be honest with you. I felt, I almost a sense of like, man, am I not a good friend? Right, I didn't recognize this. This friend, we'd never been on a team outside of training together, but, when his wife said, "Hey, come quick." I'm like, I think I put in an article like, "What the is going on here?" Like, what's happening? What is going on? And, had to go and deal with a very large, well-armed man who was beside himself with grief, with guilt, with doubt about the future, not knowing if, for instance, he was worthy to raise his innocent young daughter, toddler. And even with all the training as a leader, you get all this training on how to deal with it. Nobody really ever gives you any good training on, hey, what to do if you're a friend. But I'll tell you what I didn't do. I didn't ask him if I could have a stereo.
Right.
I didn't try to go out for drinks. It was just like, wow. So I call for help. I had to enlist some other people because I was ill-prepared, ill-equipped, and uninformed. and so that's what I did.
Yeah. And so were there, since you had the training to recognize these kind of warning signs with PTSD and everything, were those warning signs even there in this person? Or was he just kind of covering it up and swallowing it down and not showing any of these warning signs?
Yeah. No real warning signs. Master of disguise is a way to, especially, I'm not taking anything away from any other MOS career field or whatever, but again, special forces, infantry, all these things, there's a facade. There's an attitude that you have to take in. And
right. And
he was master of putting on that front. And beside himself is understating it, and learning things at that moment. By the way, also completely intoxicated on like way too much moonshine. So, it was one of those things like, man, I hope this guy goes to sleep because he'll probably be asleep for 12 hours.
Yeah. That'll be 12 hours that he's going to be, pretty much because he's out at that point. But, So you ended up getting him some help. How's he doing now? With all of that, is he, out through the woods with all that, or is there's still stuff going on?
I got to tell you, it's really interesting how things work out where, now I'm in a position where I'm trying to get some message and some good information out for veterans, because I'll tell you what, it was less about the trauma he'd been through and more about the time he had on his hands.
Okay.
And I say that because he was in the middle of transitioning himself. Right. Mm-hmm. Big boy, like senior NCO had some free time to, hey, you have all these appointments, go take care of the appointments. We don't think you're going to not do these appointments. Go do your thing from his chain of command. That's how I transitioned. It worked out for me, albeit with some issues that I dealt with. And time on this person's hand was not a good thing. Idle hands, right?
Right.
To you know, you have the trauma or whatever had happened in the past, add alcohol, and then add uncertainty about the future. I mean, that's a recipe for disaster. And it very nearly was. And when I say it well armed, I mean, you know, this guy has a lot of guns.
Yeah. No, I got that. Yeah. That makes
sense. More than you would think, you know, and, right. And so walking into like, oh, I'm going to my friend's house and he is intoxicated and beside himself, possibly suicidal and well armed. You know, you have a pace plan. You're like, what do I do if, you know,
right.
Yeah. And not saying I went armed to my friend's house, but maybe I did just in case.
Right. And, you know, honestly, it's one bad mistake, one bad decision that's all it takes, you know, to change the course of someone's life and, you know,
yeah.
In some extreme cases, you know, ending it. And that's not what anyone wants for any of especially any of our friends or, you know, any of the other veterans or service members out there. Like we don't want that. And that's, you know, right. I think why both of us are here today talking about all this.
Yeah. And to answer your question. So, eventually, you know, eventually you got help. By the way, I made some mistakes along the way. I chalked it up to alcohol because I was told, you know, by that person, like, oh man, no, man, I was just drunk. Sorry about that. It's all good, man. I'm going to get help. Well, guess what? That wasn't the last time. You know, there were several times between that before, you know, I talked about in the article, kind of what I did and the mistakes I made. And, mm-hmm. you know, it took biting that bullet, like reaching out to the chain of command. Through other people. And by the way, it's not an easy thing to do when this person's transitioning.
Right.
Like who cares? Right. I think the last time this person was already on terminal leave. Right. So like who's okay. in charge now? But so,
right. At that point, you know, there's that transition already in process.
Right.
And, yeah.
Right. And so we're fortunate enough, a couple things happened. Number one, we got him help. He went away for a while, a couple times. And then he got his time taken care of, meaning that he ended up getting a job, which gave him something to do, something he was interested in.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I'm not saying we're out of the woods, but for now, things are real good. I check up on them. Just like, you know, other people do, like, hey, how's it going? Any more, you know, what's going on? And, you know, I could be reading it wrong, but right now it seems like things are steady and I haven't got any late night phone calls. So that's good. So that's
good. Yeah, that's good. And having a sense of purpose is probably a big thing for people who are transitioning out. And if you're sitting there with no job, no prospects for a job, no, you know, you have no idea what your future is going to hold for you. It's kind of hard to say that you have any sort of sense of purpose going
right.
on.
Right. And when you've led such a purposeful life,
mm-hmm.
right. You know, hey, in this person's case, you know, his job on the team was an important job. Like people depended on him, even when he wasn't on the team, when he was like in training, people depended on him. People, if he didn't do his job, things didn't happen, right? You didn't have what you needed to do the mission or the training mission or whatever. So going from being important, having purpose to not knowing what your purpose is, that's extremely dangerous, extremely volatile moment. And I, you know, I don't have the empirical data, but I would posit that leads to a lot of these numbers that we see when it comes to veteran suicide or active duty suicide.
Yeah. I don't think that you're wrong there. I think that's definitely probably, you know, some of the reasons why there. So, yeah. So to wrap up this article, you know, what we're talking about here, you wrote about some resources and tips, you know, with you know, for veterans, for their loved ones to go check out and stuff like that. And, The VA is a great place to start. I think that's one of the common places that most people would look to right off the bat when looking for these things. And there's hundreds of other resources. We talk about a lot of them on this show. So I'm not going to go and list through all the different types of resources that are out there. We can spend a whole nother episode just talking about different resources that are out there. But I think more important is, let's say someone is in that same situation that you were in, where they get a phone call from, a buddy's wife or a girlfriend or a family member or whatever, and they're in that same situation, and the person's talking about suicide, and obviously no one wants that to happen to a friend or anyone that they care about. So what are some of the steps? So I know you said you made some mistakes, and so making mistakes is all part of life. That you make mistakes and you learn along the way. And so what are some of the things that you did and wish you maybe had done better along the way to help your buddy out? And how can people help out their friends and going forward in the future or their loved ones?
Right, it's a tough one, man, because there are so many resources out there, right? If you get to the point where somebody is in that state, you gotta forget about their feelings. You gotta forget about how it's gonna affect their sense of self-esteem, to be honest with you. A lot of people don't, I don't want anybody to know about this, or, I don't want the chain of command. And man, I ended up calling somebody who got the chain of command involved, kind of in a unofficial way, to be honest with you. We're blessed to have some resources that maybe some other folks don't have. I should have done that earlier. I shouldn't have left the first time with the idea, he'll sleep it off. Thankfully he did. And thankfully there was a time in between the first and the second incident where things were relatively calm. But, I think there's everything that I could have done the first time. I could have done it better. I could have been a better friend, maybe. Mm-hmm. I could have stuck around instead of like, oh, he's asleep, I'm gonna go home. I could have been more prepared. And I think that's really what I want people to get out of this, is it's just because maybe you're not suffering. If you are a veteran, chances are there's somebody you know out there who's dealing with trauma from their military experience. Or even there, if they're, you have a friend who's never been in the military, you being empathetic and honest about what you're feeling, what you're gathering from being empathetic, mm-hmm. ask some questions, and be a person who somebody could talk to, and drop the facade of like, oh, we're all tough. We're not. We're human beings.
We're all human, right?
We're all human beings, and you might be able to rock march with 100 pounds on your back for 20 miles. Your brain does not care. You're going to carry that load with you.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think, just sometimes all people need is just someone to listen to them and hear them out. And, you don't have to necessarily have a pissing contest and say, like my problems are better or bigger than yours or anything like that. Sometimes their problems are their problems and they just need someone to listen to them and hear them out and, and maybe help them work through that issue that way, and sometimes people are smart. They can figure things out on their own a lot of times. And sometimes they just need a sounding board to talk to, I think ultimately if, like you did in your situation, if it's too much for you to handle and it's not something that you can do on your own, call another friend, get somebody else involved, send up the flares and let people know that there's a situation going on. And that way more people are involved. And that way, if there's a mistake that you are making, hopefully the other person is going to, you know, step in and kind of pick up the slack where you were making that mistake too.
Yeah. So. You know, Scott, that's an important thing too, is there's a lot to be said about the mental health and emotional health of the supporter, right? It's exhausting.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
4 hours, 5 hours with somebody who's in that state, or like thinking, hey, I wonder, tonight's a Friday. I wonder if I'm going to get a call. You know, it's exhausting. You know, you come home and, for me, I spoke to my wife and was just like, I don't know, like out of the blue, like I'm blindsided. I'm exhausted. You know, so having the ability to bring others in, by the way, this is not a one size fit all solution, right? But for me, I talked to some other people. So we had kind of an internal support group, if you will. And it spanned a couple states, but that really helped. And I think in the long run, it kind of pushed us to where we are now, where, you know, we're coming out of the woods. Nobody's ever really out of the woods, but here we are.
Yeah. But you're on your way out. You see the field on the other side, and it's, you know, everyone's doing a little bit better, with that. But I liked, you know, how you said that, you know, you're always kind of just waiting for that call, and you're just on edge, just, you know, it's tonight can be the night that I'm going to get that call or whatever. But it kind of reminds me of, you know, when you're out in, I don't know, Iraq or Afghanistan or, you know, wherever you're deployed to, it's like, you know, is today going to be the day that I roll over an IED, or is today going to be that day? And so you're constantly on edge. You're constantly looking for something. And so, I mean, I know, you know, from my experience that gets exhausting too. And so it's probably exhausting very much in the same way, where you're constantly waiting for that next thing. And you can't necessarily go like make plans to go enjoy life because you're worried, you know, am I going to have to drop everything to go help this person out?
Adage is like, we're already dead.
Well,
right. No matter when, right. Is that's kind of how you feel. And, you know, you brought up the whole IED thing in Iraq and having been in Iraq a bunch of times. Yeah, I tell people it could be a 20-minute patrol down in the green zone. When you get back, it felt like you fought 12 rounds. You're just like exhausted because that hypervigilance. And that hypervigilance isn't just in combat. It's, you know, when you're dealing with a situation where you have a friend or a loved one who was is going through that. So it's exhausting, but it's worth the work, just like anything else.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. Like, I would do it all over again, you know, going on a deployment, doing the job that we did. And, you know, even with all that work that was involved, that, you know, being exhausted after, like you said, after 20 minutes of, you know, just walking around and, you know, patrolling around an area because you're constantly head on a swivel looking for that next thing that's going to come out and bite you.
Yeah, by the way, like, I don't know if not to mention all that, but it's kind of a change of subject, really. But, you know, those frozen bottles of water we used to get in 30 minutes of boiling water. Let's not forget those days in Iraq when 120 degrees, and you're like, what the heck? I can make tea with this thing in an hour.
Yeah.
It's a solid block of ice.
Right. Yeah. No, I mean, that's true, too. We used to do that, you know. Bring out frozen water bottles, you know, walk around with those, and then, in no time they were almost boiling.
But memories. Nobody remembers the good times, by the way. It always seems like
it's always the suck.
Right, a drill sergeant of mine who I occasionally see, randomly, he always says, "Sucked, didn't it?" Yeah, it sucked. He's like, you only remember it because it sucked, and I bet you love it. And I'm like, kind of do.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and just like that, you know, it did suck, but you at the same time you kind of loved it, right? Yeah, you would do it again. Like if you're looking back at it and you were to tell 18-year-old yourself, you know, should I do this, should I not do this, give yourself advice, you'd probably do it again. Yeah. You know, And I think to that point, anyone that we are talking about here who's struggling with PTSD, they're not a burden. It's something that, like, if you came to me and said that you had a problem and I was exhausted after talking you through it and helping you out and everything like that, don't get me wrong, man, it might have been exhausting, but I would do it 1,000 more times just to make sure that you got the help that you needed, you know?
Yeah, I'll take it a step further. Anybody listening to this, my contact information will be in the show notes, I'm sure.
Yep.
Reach out to me. I could be a friend. I could be somebody to listen to, or somebody who could help you get the resources that you need.
Yeah. And yeah, exactly. And I think that's a great point. You're not alone out there. You know, if you're listening to this and you're thinking, man, this sucks. I don't have anyone to talk to. You know, I wish I had someone to talk to, but I burned all those bridges for whatever reason. You're not alone. There are people out there who are willing to talk to you. Reach out, talk to people, get the help that you need.
Right.
Oh, that got kind of deep. let's switch gears just a little bit here. I'd love to hear more about Better in Life. So like what it's all about, and what's going on to help veterans and their families, through Better in Life.
Yeah. So Better in Life is a new website, brand new. Basically we had it's July now, but we had a launch here during the summer. The website looks fantastic. And the intent behind it is to be informative, entertaining, and authentic, right? So it's equal parts of information that people want. You're a veteran, you want information about the GI Bill, or you want information about VA loans, or something like that. We want to have that information in a way that you could easily digest. Also, you know, we're really looking for to be some place where you could be entertained a bit, right? So some of the articles that we have on there are written by veterans or veteran spouses, and they're kind of funny. Yeah, they might even be a little bit abrasive, okay? Quite honestly, we're not trying to be controversial, or we're not trying to piss anybody off, but when we sat down and talked about what we want the site to be, I explained it like this. I want it to be the grizzly NCO who's not afraid to look you in the face and be like, dude, what the hell are you doing? You know, or
right,
like, dude, get off your butt, man. Go, like, this is America. Go out and be somebody. Do something. Or
do something with, yeah, exactly.
Or like, dude, you screwed this up bad. Let's fix it, right? So so that's kind of what it is. And we're new site, so we have a handful of articles right now that are posted on there that have been written over the last year or so. Some predate me joining the company, and we've been able to get a website up. Looks good. I've got an amazing team who is really working hard to get the content out there, make sure it looks good and it's appealing, and also, you know, markets well, informative. And, you know, I'm blessed to be in the position where I am now, where, you know, I could really have an impact. Bottom line is when you look across, you know, we did a little bit of market research, and what we found was that there's a lot of websites out there like, hey, you know, we're this place where you can read articles, testimonials, and get information and stuff. It's about veterans, blah, blah, blah. A lot of it's really about active duty. And then they have like a veteran section, you know,
as an afterthought, kind of.
Yeah, kind of. And, you know, that's weird, because when you consider the amount of active duty people is X, I don't know, 3 million, maybe tops. In the amount of veterans out there, GWAT veterans, which is kind of the demographic that I think is what we're after, is, I mean, like something around like 17, 20 million. I don't know. Big.
Lots. It's definitely more than the current actively right. serving. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. And so it just makes sense to, like, hey, let's talk to this audience. Let's get some information out there. Let's make them laugh. Let's make them want to come back. So, you know, I've been like, yeah. You know, in my veteran brain, I've been spending a little bit of time every day thinking, you know, it'd be a funny meme is this, you know, like I posted one the other day of, you can hear it. If you saw the meme, you could hear it. It's the guy from Nickelback holding the picture out, you know, and it's
the photograph song or whatever.
The photograph, right? And it's, it's, hey, this is every veteran on 4th of July ruining the family barbecue with pictures from deployment. You know, everybody knows that guy. You know, there's just things like that. So we're trying to be entertaining. We're trying to be engaging, trying to also be informative. And, you know, right now it's kind of, like you said, I have an amazing team of folks here in Nashville and actually several parts of the country who are making it happen. And I think it's going to be, I think it's going to really take hold. And I think it's going to be a lot of fun working with it. And, you know, we're looking for contributors. We're looking for people who've wrote before, who want to do a testimonial about, you know, you know, that guy who was in the infantry platoon and then went to some liberal arts college in Maine, you know, that's hilarious, right? I mean, think about that, like the juxtaposition of being in an infantry platoon and then having to deal with, I don't know, some kind of weird study in some college in Maine. I want to hear about it. I want to hear about it. I want to put it out there because somebody out there is going to relate to it. You know,
I know that guy. Like I know exactly who you're talking about, because I did things a little bit backwards. I went to college first and then I joined the military. And after I, so when I was in college, there was a guy who just got out of the military. It was like the Billy Madison type thing where he's the older guy in class and he was grumpy and pissed off at all these, you know, 18, 19, 20 year old kids who were, you know, just being pains in the ass, you know, and everything. And he was just that guy that you're talking about, you know?
Yeah. And then that's a funny article, right? That's something that like is relatable, but it also comes with like, well, here are some of the things you could do to maybe not stand out like a sore thumb.
Yeah.
You know, or like just embrace who you are. Right. Then there's, you know, other pieces of content that we're working on, like things that nobody, if you weren't a veteran, you wouldn't know, like, hey, I'm no longer in the military. I'm home all the time. I think my family wants me to deploy again. Like they're tired of having me around. Do they hate me? How do I get help? How do I be a 365 father? Which, you know, so many of us have never had the opportunity to be.
Right.
So these are some of the ideas that are being kicked around for content. And I think it's going to be an absolute blast. And we're developing some tools along the way that'll be really helpful to, some of them will be fun, some lighthearted, but also some serious ones about finance or, you know, like, should I refinance my house or should I use the VA benefit to buy a multifamily home, you know, things like that. Mm-hmm. So I'm excited about it. Thanks for mentioning it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. I'm always, you know, looking to get more resources out there to people and make sure people know, you know, what's out there so that they can check things out. And it looks like, you know, you guys are well on your way to, you know, putting out all sorts of great content and everything. And by the time this episode comes out, it'll be sometime in September when this episode comes out. So I'm sure there's going to be even more resources out there than there are right now. So that's really great. So
I should mention too, by the way, that nothing we put out is meant to be hurtful or harmful or anything like that. We have an article right now that's doing really well called How Not to Be a Fat Civilian. Okay. That's, you know, it's not PC. I understand that there's a lot of sensitivity over things now.
Yeah.
And I didn't write the article. This is somebody who wrote the article who was struggling with himself, perhaps becoming a fat civilian. Right. And it's this way of saying, hey, here are some things that I can do to prevent that. And one of the great comments that we got on Facebook this weekend was like, hey, when I got out after 30 years, I was 175. I was a lean, mean fighting machine. And 5 years later, I was 276 pounds. And wow. I looked myself in the mirror and looked myself in the eye and said, got to do something. And that's what we mean. We don't mean any harm. We're talking. The aim is to talk the way we talk, the way we communicate. And nobody in the military can tell me that somebody hasn't went up to them with a knife hand, very bluntly said, hey, idiot.
Yeah, exactly. But with all the best of intentions when they're saying,
exactly.
Yeah, they'll tell you you're an idiot to your face, but they mean it in the best possible way.
Yeah. Your hand's hot. Maybe you should take it away from that fire.
Yeah.
so that's kind of, in funny, entertaining way, we're trying to communicate in the way that we know how to communicate.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, and that's I think that's the best way to do it. To go back to your roots, if you will, and just talk the way that we're used to talking to each other, and I think that can help with that, maybe camaraderie that people are missing, and even if it's coming from an article that they're reading online, it's good to get a good laugh and kind of reminisce about things too. So
yeah, for sure.
So, well, Cliff, it has been a pleasure speaking with you today. I think we covered a lot of topics. We got deep on some of the topics, and I think we really had some good stuff going on there. So where can people go to find out more about Veteran Life and, to check out Veteran Life and all the articles and follow them and everything?
Yeah, veteranlife.com is going to be your best bet. We also are on socials. There's several different handles just because Veteran Life is something that somebody's taken hold of at some point on Instagram. So it's this is Veteran Life. It'll be in the show notes, you told me. So
yes. Yeah. All of this will be in the show notes. So I just want to make sure we had everyone knowing where to go. I know the website, veteranlife.com, that will be in the show notes, but we'll have links to all your socials and everything too. So if anyone wants to follow you there, check out the show notes and be sure to give them a follow.
Yeah. And if you get a chance to go to veteranlife.com, there's a subscribe button where monthly we'll be sending out we're calling it the monthly debrief. So we kind of like keep some veteran military vernacular in there, but not too much to make you puke.
Sure. Got it. Yeah.
Right. We're not coddling, but the debrief will send out, what you may have missed or what you may have forgot about from the previous month. And that's probably the best way to keep up to date with what we have going on at veteranlife.com.
Okay. Awesome. Yeah. So check that out, go to veteranlife.com, subscribe to their, the debrief and, follow them on social. And we'll have all the links to all that in the show notes. And so go check them out.
Thanks
again. All right.
Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to the Drive On podcast. If you want to check out more episodes or learn more about the show, you can visit our website, driveonpodcast.com. We're also on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and YouTube at Drive On Podcast.